Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in 2 Samuel chapter 17. We will entitle this chapter, Hushai Saves David. Our context is this. We're in the middle of a civil war between David's son Absalom and David. In our previous chapter, chapter 16, we see Absalom entering Jerusalem as he comes up from Hebron, and David has fled from Jerusalem, gone to the top of Mount Olive, and a little bit past on the eastern side of Mount Olives at a place called Bahurim. And so that's where we are now as we start 2 Samuel 17, verses 1 through 4. Ahithophel said to Absalom, "Let me choose 12,000 men, and I will set out in pursuit of David tonight. I will attack him while he is weak and weary, throw him into a panic, and all the people with him will scatter. I will strike down only the king and bring all the people back to you. When everyone returns except the man you're seeking, i.e. David, all the people will be at peace." This proposal seemed good to Absalom and all the elders of Israel. Now we're going to see here that actually this was good advice that Ahithophel was given to Absalom. Good advice from Absalom's point of view. And so David's in trouble. But Hushai has been sent to Jerusalem by David in order to insinuate himself into the counsels of Absalom to give Absalom bad advice so that Absalom will screw up his attack on David. And that's what happened. Now Ahithophel, who was a traitor, who used to be David's chief advisor, Ahithophel says to Absalom, "Let me choose 12,000 men. Now that shows how big Absalom's rebellion was. To have 12,000 men from available soldiers, that's a lot of people. It's not all of Israel, but it's a lot of soldiers. Now, if Ahithophel's plan had been adopted here, David would have been toast. His army is disorganized. His kingdom's he's on the run. His kingdom is all askew. His army is askew. Ahithophel could have hit him hard. He's already given advice to let Absalom go into David's concubines. That would stiffen up Absalom's supporters so that they know that the die has been cast between Absalom and David. They'll never be reconciled. So we better just go ahead and put Absalom on the throne, because there's no chance now of him going back to David. So we think he's going to pull this off. And then, of course, if Absalom had captured David, that would have been the end of it. But notice now that Ahithophel wants to be set in charge of these 12,000 men. Now, why did Ahithophel want to be the general rather than Absalom himself? Well, Ahithophel wants to show how confident he was of success. He wants to keep Absalom from danger. He doesn't want his king to get killed. He wants to keep Absalom from showing mercy on David when David was captured. He wants to keep Absalom from reconciling to David before David was captured. He figured he better be in charge of this expedition. Now, there are two all the peoples, one in verse 2 and one in verse 3. Verse 2, Ahithophel says, "All the people with David will scatter." Verse 3, he says, "I will bring all the people back to you." Well, at first glance, it seems just the easiest thing to say that that's all the people with David are going to scatter, and then they're going to be brought back to Absalom's allegiance. But some people have said, no, the first all the people in verse 2 is all the people who were with David, Ahithophel will scatter, and then he's going to bring all the people back in Israel, everybody. Not just those who fled with David, but those whose allegiance was still with David, but who didn't flee across the Jordan River, they're going to come back too. Well, either way, the point is he's going to win, Ahithophel says, if his plan is adopted. Now, in verse 3, Holman Christian Study Bible says this, "When everyone returns except the man you're seeking." Well, that makes sense. That means when I get all the people back that follow David, but I'm not going to bring David back, I'm going to kill him. And the idea is, in fact, I'm going to look at this translation issue. I'm going to give you a bunch of different translations. But all of the translations have this idea. If David were killed, then all the people would naturally follow Absalom. So let's look at the literal words here. The NASB note gives those literal words. "Like the return of the whole is the man whom you seek." Well, what does that mean? It means nothing to me. And the translators have trouble with it. So let's look at the NASB, 2 Samuel 17:3, "I will bring back all the people to you. The return of everyone depends on the man you seek." So Ahithophel says, "I will get everybody that's following David come back to Absalom, and those people's return depends upon whether you can kill David." 2 Samuel 17:3, this is God's Word translation. "I'll return all the people to you as a bride is returned to her husband. Since you will be seeking the life of only one man, all the people will have peace. Again, the idea is, one man's killed, everybody else comes back to Absalom. 2 Samuel 17:3, Young's Literal Translation. And I will bring all the people unto thee, as the turning back of the whole is the man whom thou art seeking. A little wooden, a little literal, but the same idea. The turning back of the whole comes from taking care of the one whom you are seeking, David. The New American Bible says this, Then I can bring back the rest of the people to you, as a bride returns to her husband. It is the death of only one man you are seeking. Then all the people will be at peace. That's fairly clear. Bible in basic English, and I will make all the people come back to you as a bride comes back to her husband. It is the life of only one man you are going after, so all the people will be at peace. So that's the idea here. It's good advice. Verse 4, this proposal seemed good to Absalom. Now that shows that Absalom was in agreement with Ahithophel's plan to kill David, and that shows that Absalom was a wannabe parasite. Wants to kill his own father. Now, Ahithophel's advice here fits in with his earlier advice for Absalom to sleep with David's concubine. Ahithophel is in favor of the offensive, a quick offensive, two quick blows to put to death any idea of reconciliation. Sleeping with David's concubines, a big no-no in the ancient Near East, an act of total rebellion, which will embolden Absalom's supporters to say, boy, he means business, I'm going to follow him. And then also, let's cross the river real quick and hit David while he's weak, real quick, before we have to muster all the other troops of Israel. Let's just take 12,000 soldiers we got here and go get him. So there's Ahithophel's offensive of advice, the advice to go on the offensive quickly. Now notice that not only did Absalom like Ahithophel's advice, but also all the elders of Israel. And that shows how fast David's counselors had turned on him. These are elders of Israel, the people who were in David's government. Now, this leads me to think that there was a lot of discontent with David before the rebellion. John Gill says it's sort of strange that they turned on him real fast, that the elders turned on David so quickly. This is Gill's quote. It is strange that the elders of Israel should be pleased with it, with this advice, and agree to and determine upon the death of a prince who had so many years ruled them with justice and equity, clemency and mercy, and fought their battles for them, and raised their nation to such a pitch of glory it never had before. Yeah, well, that was true, but that was in David's glory years. Lately, he's an adulterer and a murderer. I can see how he might have lost some support to Absalom because of those deeds. I mean, we've got a horrible president right now. His approval ratings average are in the 30s. I mean, he's so unpopular, I don't think his wife loves him. But he didn't kill somebody. He hasn't committed adultery with anybody. David did. And I think that's why he lost so much political support here. We go now to 2 Samuel 17, verses 5 through 10. Then Absalom said, Summon Hushai the Archite also. Let's hear what he has to say as well. So Hushai came to Absalom, and Absalom told him, Ahithophel offered this proposal. Should we carry out his proposal? If not, what do you say? Hushai replied to Absalom, The advice Ahithophel has given this time is not good. Hushai continued, You know your father and his men. They are warriors and are desperate like a wild bear robbed of her cubs. Your father is an experienced soldier who won't spend the night with the people. He's probably already hiding in one of the caves or some other place. If some of our troops fall first, someone is sure to hear and say, There's been a slaughter among the people who follow Absalom. Then even a brave man with the heart of a lion will melt because all Israel knows that your father and the valiant men with him are warriors. Now, verse 5, Absalom says, Summon Hushai the Archite. It's sort of remarkable that Absalom would call Hushai at this time. He's already agreed with the council of Ahithophel and all the elders agreed with it, so why is he getting a second opinion? Especially since Hushai was known to be an intimate friend and confidant of David. Hushai was a later arrival to Absalom's cause than Ahithophel was. Well, I think to answer that, it's typical for leaders to get second opinions from their advisors. That happens all the time. I would, if I was in Absalom's place, I'd get a second opinion. But this second opinion was by the providence of God, and it saved David's life and saved David's kingdom. Now, notice how crafty Hushai is. When he's talking to Absalom, he's very nice to Ahithophel as he contradicts Ahithophel's advice. He said, this time, Ahithophel's advice is not good, which implies that most of the time it is good. Sort of craft, sort of laudatory of Ahithophel. Hushai is making it seem like there's nothing personal in his opposition to Ahithophel. This is just a military discussion we're having here, and it's objective advice. And it sure sounds like it. So Hushai says, David's men are particularly fierce because they lost everything. Their wives and their children and estate all had to be left behind in Jerusalem. So they're fighting with their backs against the wall. They were on Sun Tzu's death ground. Sun Tzu, the great Chinese military philosopher, who said that once soldiers have nothing to lose, they would fight to the death. In fact, some military commanders have deliberately sunk their ships behind them with a landing party so that the soldiers know they can't retreat to the ship, so they've got no choice but to fight to the death. That's Sun Tzu's idea. And this is what Hushai is pointing out. David, your father's got his back against the wall. He's not going to go down easy. And the next thing Hushai says is he's not spending the night with all his people over there. He's probably hiding in a cave. Now, why would David hide in a cave rather than spend the night with the people? Well, he would know Absalom's coming after his person, so hiding in a cave would make more sense than being with the people. David would also perhaps think that the people he was with might have traitorous designs on David. After all, David had suffered a lot of traitorous defections lately. Can he really trust all those people who've crossed the Jordan? And so Hushai's advice, suggestion, that David would be hiding in a cave makes a lot of sense. So he's got Absalom's attention now. And then Hushai goes further and said, look, if we attack the people as we go look for David, and if it happens that one of our troops falls first, then there's a chance that panic might spread, that rumor might spread, oh my gosh, there's a slaughter among the people who follow Absalom. Now, the reason that some of Absalom's troops might fall first is because they would be subject to an ambush, because David would be hiding in caves with his soldiers, and then he jumps out of the cave and kills some people, and it might start a panic. An ambush is particularly devastating, as of course you know. And so again, this is very good advice that Ahithophel is given. We go now to 2 Samuel 17:11-13. Hushai continues, but I counsel that all Israel be surely gathered to you, from Dan even to Beersheba, as the sand that is by the sea in abundance, and that you personally go into battle. So we shall come to him in one of the places where he can be found, and we will fall on him as the dew falls on the ground. And of him and of all the men who are with him, not even one will be left. If he withdraws into a city, then all Israel shall bring ropes to that city, and we will drag it into the valley until not even a small stone is found there. Verse 11, Hushai says, I counsel. His advice has two excellent features from David's point of view. It sounds great to Absalom, and it does. It sounds great military strategy. And so that lured Absalom into following the bad advice. And the second nice feature about Hushai's advice is that it is actually terrible strategy for Absalom, no matter how well it sounds, no matter how good it sounds. It's terrible strategy because it gives David time to recoup and to reorganize. The reason it does is because Ahithophel says in verse 11, Absalom, you need to get all Israel gathered. That means mustered. Well, to go from Dan to Beersheba, Dan in the north, Beersheba in the south, and collect troops, that's going to take a good bit of time. Ahithophel's plan just said, take the 12,000 we have with us and go get David. That was smart. That would have been a good idea. But Hushai says, no, let's take your time. Hushai, David's worm, says, no, let's get all the soldiers we can so we'll be safe. He doesn't mention anything about the time that it's going to take to get those soldiers together. The next thing that Hushai did is he said, no, I don't think we ought to let Ahithophel lead the troops. I think, Absalom, you should do it. So Hushai appealed to Absalom's vanity and ambition. Let's look at Hushai's closing argument to Absalom. Well, let's look at a summary of his previous arguments to Absalom. David's men would fight fiercely because their backs were to the wall, so you better have more troops. David would be hiding and difficult to find, so you better have more troops, get them from all over Israel. Absalom's army would likely to be ambushed, and that first defeat after an ambush would send panic through the rest of the army, so you better have more troops so you don't get ambushed. David's army was tough and experienced, so you better get more troops. Good argument. The only thing is, it's going to take so much time that David's going to have time to get his act together. So this is Hushai's closing argument. In addition to those previous arguments for more troops, he is appealing to Absalom's vanity and ambition. He's also pointing out that maybe Absalom at the head of the troops might inspire the troops to fight better. All in all, good plan. So verse 12, Hushai says, we shall come to David in one of the places where he can be found, even in a cave. It doesn't matter where it is. We've got so many troops. We'll find him. We will fall on him as the dew falls on the ground. There's not a blade of grass that can escape the dew. Likewise, there's not one cave that's going to escape our massive troops that we're using to search for David. There's another possibility. Maybe David escapes from a cave, but if he has to go somewhere, so if he withdraws into a city, verse 13, all Israel shall bring ropes to that city and will drag the wall down. They would take hooks from ropes and put the hooks, throw the hooks over the walls, and then the hooks would grab a hold of the wall, then they would pull on the ropes and pull the walls down. But they'll have enough troops to do that, because they've mustered troops from Dan to Beersheba. We go now to 2 Samuel 17, verses 14 through 16. Then Absalom and all the men of Israel said, the counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel. For the Lord had ordained to thwart the good counsel of Ahithophel, so that the Lord might bring calamity on Absalom. Then Hushai said to Zadok and to Abiathar the priest, this is what Ahithophel counseled Absalom and the elders of Israel, and this is what I have counseled. Now therefore, send quickly and tell David, saying, do not spend the night at the fords of the wilderness. By all means cross over, or else the king and all the people who are with him will be destroyed. Now notice in verse 14, the Lord had ordained to thwart the good counsel of Ahithophel. God controls the events of history, and there's nobody's free will violated. Was Ahithophel's free will violated? No. Was Hushai's free will violated? No. Was Absalom's free will violated? No. But God worked it all out so that Absalom screwed himself big time. All right, so the men of Israel are saying, Hushai's advice is better, so it's looking good. In verse 15, Hushai said to Zadok and to Abiathar the priest, this is what Ahithophel counseled, and this is what I have counseled. Now notice, Hushai does not tell Zadok and Abiathar, who were the two priests that David had sent back to Jerusalem to act as spies for David. Notice that Hushai doesn't tell them, I've got it, I won, my advice is going to be taken, and that's going to give David plenty of time to get his army together, because Absalom is trying to muster troops from all over Israel. He did not say that to Zadok and Abiathar. He said, I told him one thing, Ahithophel told him the other, and basically what he's saying here is, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know whether Absalom's going to take my advice and delay or not, or whether it's going to take Ahithophel's advice and attack immediately. I just don't know. Well, I'm not going to take a chance. So you go tell David, don't hang around there at the fords of the wilderness. Hushai is saying, as you flee east from Bahurim at the top of the Mount of Olives towards the Jordan River, don't monkey around. Don't even spend the night at the fords on the west side of the Jordan River. Go ahead and cross over. And if you don't, you and all your people are going to be destroyed. Serious business here. Now, the Lord had ordained to thwart the good counsel of Ahithophel. God had also ordained Absalom to carry out punishment on David. 2 Samuel 12, 10 through 12, Nathan says to David, now therefore the sword shall never depart from your house, because you have despised me and have taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife. Thus says the Lord, behold, I will raise up evil against you from your own household. I will even take your wives before your eyes and give them to your companion, and he will lie with your wives in broad daylight. Indeed, you did it secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel and under the sun. So you see, God sovereignly punishes David, and God sovereignly preserves his kingdom. Punishment and grace. Punishment and grace. That's the way God works. He can do it. Notice how God in his sovereignty punished the instrument of David's punishment. God used Absalom to punish David, and then he punishes Absalom for being a jerk. And this, of course, tempers David's punishment. And once again, I repeat, Absalom acted entirely of his own free will, yet he unintentionally and unconsciously carried out God's sovereign will. Now, I mentioned that Zadok and Abiathar had been placed as spies in Jerusalem. Those were the two co-high priests at the time, Zadok of the descendant of Aaron's son Eleazar, and Abiathar the son of Aaron's fourth son, Ithamar. So Zadok and Abiathar are in the city as spies. We see that in the last chapter, 2 Samuel 15:35. Are not Zadok and Abiathar the priest with you there? So it shall be that whatever you, Hushai, hear from the king's house, you shall report to Zadok and Abiathar the priest. And that's what happened. Hushai, in verse 15 here in 2 Samuel 17, has told the two conflicting counsels that have been given to Absalom. He tells that to Zadok and Abiathar. We go now to 2 Samuel 17, verses 17 through 19. Jonathan and Ahimaaz were staying at En-Rogel, where a servant girl would come and pass along information to them. They in turn would go and inform King David because they dared not be seen entering the city. However, a young man did see them and informed Absalom. So the two left quickly and came to the house of a man in Bahurim. He had a well in his courtyard, and they, that's Jonathan and Ahimaaz, climbed down into it. Then his wife, the man's wife, took the cover, placed it over the mouth of the well, and scattered grain on it so nobody would know anything. Now who are these two, Jonathan and Ahimaaz? They were the sons of Zadok. Ahimaaz was the son of Zadok, and Jonathan was the son of Abiathar. So they were the two sons of the two Kohai priests. They had been sent into Jerusalem by David also. They didn't end up in Jerusalem. They ended up in En-Rogel, right outside of Jerusalem, but they had been sent there into Jerusalem by David. 2 Samuel 15:27. The king said also to Zadok the priest, "Are you not a seer? Return to the city in peace, and your two sons with you, your son Ahimaaz and Jonathan the son of Abiathar." So they go there on the way into Jerusalem. They didn't end up in Jerusalem. They ended up in En-Rogel. And John Gill says that's because their fathers, Zadok and Abiathar, had said, "Oh, don't go into Jerusalem. Stay in En-Rogel, and we'll run some messages to you using servant girls. You'll be safe there. You won't be seen going into the city." Now, this En-Rogel is just south of Jerusalem, just below the junction of the Valley of Hinnom and the Valley of Jehoshaphat. The Valley of Hinnom is to the south of that tongue of land that's a hill that's called the City of David or Mount Zion on the western side of that peninsula of land, if I can call it that, is the Tyropean Valley, and the southern valley below Mount Zion, the City of David, is the Hinnom Valley, and then the eastern valley is the Kidron Valley that goes up along the eastern side. Now, if you look at the map, right where the Kidron Valley comes down, going from north to south, it gets right to the tip of the City of David, Mount Zion, and right below that tip, another 2 or 3 miles or so, is En-Rogel. So they were camped right outside the walls of Jerusalem, these two spies, Ahimaaz and Jonathan. So the servant girl came to Jonathan and Ahimaaz and said, "Absalom's got two conflicting counsels from his advisors. One of them is a quick attack on you, so just in case, you better be sure. You better get on over across the Jordan with your soldiers." And so Jonathan and Ahimaaz go to David to so tell him. Now, how did they hide in Bahurim in a well, in some man, unnamed man's well, because wells are dry in the summertime a lot of times, and that's how they ended up in that well. We'll go down to 2 Samuel 17, verses 20 through 22. Then Absalom's servants came to the woman at the house. This is the house in Bahurim, where the two spies are hiding in the well. And the servants, Absalom's men, came and said, "Where are Ahimaaz and Jonathan?" And the woman said to them, "They have crossed the brook of water." And when they searched, these are the two men from Absalom, or the servants, not the two, but the servants of Absalom, when they searched and could not find them, could not find Ahimaaz and Jonathan, Absalom's men returned to Jerusalem. It came about after they had departed that they came up out of the well. Ahimaaz and Jonathan came up out of the well and went and told King David. And they said to David, "Arise and cross over the water quickly, for thus Ahithophel has counseled against you." Again, his is the advice that was critical because it was a quick attack, and that would put David in dire danger. Verse 22, "Then David and all the people who were with him arose and crossed the Jordan. And by dawn, not even one remained who had not crossed the Jordan." In verse 20, Absalom's servants came to the woman at the house. This is the woman at the house at Bahurim, whose husband had hid Ahimaaz and Jonathan in the well. So Absalom's servants must have gotten wind somehow. They were on the trail, hot on the trail of these two, Ahimaaz and Jonathan. The woman, in response to a question, says, "Those two have crossed the brook of water." Now, what brook is this? Well, it could be the Jordan River, but I don't think so. The Hebrew word for brook is a proper name for a body of water, and so it could have just been, "They have crossed the brook," such and such, proper name. Or it could just be a brook that's nearby, that's not the Jordan River. But whatever brook it was, that wasn't where Jonathan and Ahimaaz were, and that means that this woman lied through her teeth to Absalom's servants. And of course, evangelical Christians being the way they are, get all bent out of shape about this. Here's what John Gill says, quote, "A lie she told them, which is not to be justified." Well, you know, I think I can justify it. I suppose John Gill would prefer that Ahimaaz and Jonathan would be caught and executed, that King David would be caught and executed, that David's kingdom would be destroyed, that the murdering, raping, incestuous, seditionist Absalom would be rewarded with a kingdom, and there would have been no place for the Messiah to have been born. Of course she was justified in lying to Absalom's servants. This is war, for crying out loud. Now in verse 21, when Jonathan and Ahimaaz finally got to David at Bahurim, they tell David, cross over the water, cross over the Jordan, leave the top of Mount Olivet and keep going east, get to the Jordan River and cross over quick, for thus Ahithophel has counseled against you. That's the offensive strategy. And again, those two messengers, Ahimaaz and Jonathan, they didn't know which advice that Absalom was going to take. They knew there was a chance he might have taken Hushai's advice, but there was also a chance that Absalom would take Ahithophel's advice. And if so, that means 12,000 troops are going to be coming here real quick, and you're going to be toast. You got to cross the Jordan River so they can't catch you. So verse 22, David took that advice, and all the people who were with him arose and crossed the Jordan. And by dawn, not even one remained who had not crossed the Jordan. Everybody got across that night, in the middle of the night. Now, Matthew Poole says they crossed either on foot at the fords or in boats. I wonder where they would have gotten the boats from, maybe from fishermen in the area. Either way, they got across, and we go now to 2 Samuel 17, verse 23. Now, when Ahithophel saw that his counsel was not followed, in the meanwhile, back in Jerusalem, Ahithophel realized that Hushai's counsel was going to be followed. Ahithophel says, uh-oh. He saddled his donkey and rose and went to his home. That's in Gilo. He went to his home, to his city, set his house in order, and strangled himself. Thus he died and was buried in the grave of his father. Adam Clark says Ahithophel was a very bad man and died an unprepared and accursed death. Now, so he goes back home. He leaves Jerusalem. Gilo, the city means exile, appropriately named, I guess. It's about 7 miles north of Hebron. Hebron was about 17 miles south of Jerusalem. So he went about 10 miles south of Jerusalem to his city, Gilo, and strangled himself. At least, apparently, that's what the text means here. He strangled himself. Although some think he strangled and choked through grief. If you think about it, he set his house in order and strangled himself. You could strangle yourself by choking, like choking on a piece of meat. No, I don't think so. I think he committed suicide. The NIV Study Bible says this is one of the 5 suicides recorded in the Bible. Why did he do it? Well, he could have been so proud that his counsel was not taken. He was so proud and offended that he says, well, I'll just take my marbles and go elsewhere. Well, that's a strange... You got to be pretty proud to kill yourself over a setback like that. I think that more likely what it was that he was sure, Ahithophel was, that David was going to win now. He's going to win because Ahithophel's counsel had been rejected and Hushai is taken, and Ahithophel was right about that. And therefore, he knew he was going to be executed for treason. That's how sure Ahithophel was that his advice was the proper advice, and since it had been rejected, his side, Absalom's side, was going to lose, and when that happened, David was going to execute him for treason, of course. So he preferred to commit suicide. That way his estate would not be confiscated by the government, his heirs would inherit. At Gilo, he's buried in the grave of his father. Apparently suicides are not deprived of honorable burials. We go now to 2 Samuel verses 24 through 26. Then David came to Mahanaim. He's crossed the Jordan now, and he goes to a place called Mahanaim. I'm going to stop right now and look at the geography of that. If you'll look at the Jabbok River, which runs roughly horizontally from east to west, in the Transjordan, east of the Jordan area, and it runs into the Jordan River. I say roughly east to west. Actually, it takes a bend once you get past Gad. The Jabbok River is the northern boundary of Gad. Once you get past Gad, as you're going east, you're into Ammon, and then the river dips southeast into Ammon, and in fact ends up going through Rabbah, the capital of Ammon, present-day Amman, Jordan. Now, this Jabbok River runs into the Jordan River about 25 miles north of the northern tip of the Dead Sea. It's roughly east of Jerusalem. And so David crossed there, and he goes up the Jabbok River to Mahanaim. Now, Mahanaim has got a question mark on my BibleAtlas.org map. People think it's generally in the area of Peniel, where Jacob wrestled with the angel, you recall, as he's returning from Aram, from Syria, as he wrestles with Jesus. Got his thigh wounded. It's right in the same area. And another thing that happened at Mahanaim, and that's where Ishbosheth, the surviving fourth son of Saul, set up his capital city of northern Israel for safety there on the east side of the Jordan where the Philistines couldn't get him. So that's why Mahanaim is famous, and this is the third reason, because David fled there. So that's where he is. Going back to verse 24, Absalom crossed the Jordan, he and all the men of Israel with him. They're chasing David. Absalom set Amasa over the army in place of Joab. Now Amasa was the son of a man whose name was Ithra the Israelite, who went into Abigail, the daughter of Nahash, sister of Zeruiah, Joab's mother. And Israel and Absalom camped in the land of Gilead. Now this crossing of the Jordan River by Absalom's troops, that didn't happen immediately. Remember, he has to muster a whole big army, and that took some time. And Absalom set Amasa in place of Joab. Joab was the general of the Israelite army, but he had gone with David. He's at Mahanaim with David. So Absalom's got to get a new general, so he gets Amasa. Now this Amasa is, like Joab, David's nephew, because David had a sister named Zeruiah. Zeruiah was Joab's mother. David had another sister called Abigail, and this is not Abigail, the wife now of David from Carmel. Not her, the former wife of Nabal, the fool. No, that's not her. This is a sister of David called Abigail. So David's got two sisters. Zeruiah is Joab's mother, and Abigail is Amasa's mother. So isn't that interesting? Everything's a family affair with David. He's got two first cousins fighting each other as generals. Now, one little textual problem here. Amasa is said to be the son of Abigail, and Abigail is said to be the daughter of Nahash. Well, if Abigail is David's sister, Abigail should be the daughter of Jesse, because you recall Jesse was David's father, and he was Zeruiah's father. So why is Abigail said to be the daughter of Nahash and not Jesse? Well, here's some options to solve that. Some people say that Nahash is another name for Jesse. The Holman Christian Study Bible note actually has Jesse in the manuscript. The note says this, quote, "Some Septuagint manuscripts read Jesse." Well, that's actually a different option. It's either Nahash is another name for Jesse, option number one, option number two, there's a textual problem and it really should be Jesse and not Nahash. Or it could be Jesse had another wife besides the mother of Zeruiah, and so they were only, Abigail and Zeruiah were only half-sisters. All these genealogical things are enough to drive anybody crazy, but they can be reconciled if you work at it. One other textual problem of minor note, Amasa was the son of Ithra the Israelite, it says here in 2 Samuel 17, verse 25. But in the parallel passage in Chronicles, 1 Chronicles 2:17, he is called Jeter the Ishmaelite, not the Israelite. How do you reconcile that? Well, either Amasa was an Ishmaelite by birth and converted to the Jewish religion, and so he's called an Ishmaelite in Chronicles, referring to his birth origin, and then he is called an Israelite in 2 Samuel, according to his Jewish religion. Or, that's one option, another option to reconcile is this. Amasa was an Israelite by birth, but he sojourned in the land of Ishmael for some time, down there south, Edomites in Edom, I guess, that people started calling him an Ishmaelite. We don't know. We don't know that much about Amasa, where he came from. It doesn't matter. But we see in verse 26, Israel and Absalom camped in the land of Gilead. Now, Gilead is that famous area, about 60 miles in length and 20 miles in breadth, that extends from near the south end of the Sea of Galilee to the north end of the Dead Sea. It's real easy to remember. 60 by 20 between the dead and the between the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea. Basically, the first thing you get to when you cross the Jordan River heading from west to east. So David's troops are near Mahanaim, and somewhere in Gilead, the text doesn't say, Amasa's troops fighting for Absalom are there. They are perched, ready to fight. We go now to 2 Samuel 17, verses 27 through 29, and we will finish this chapter. Now when David had come to Mahanaim, Shobai, the son of Nahash from Rabbah of the sons of Ammon, Machir, the son of Amiel from Lodabar, and Barzillai the Gileadite from Aroglim brought beds, basins, pottery, wheat, barley, flour, parched grain, beans, lentils, parched seeds, honey, curds, sheep, and cheese of the herd, for David and for the people who were with him to eat. For they said, the people are hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. So David found some allies over there at Mahanaim. The first is Shobai, the son of Nabash from Rabbah. Remember, Rabbah is the capital city of Ammon, present-day Amman, Jordan. In fact, let me just take you to the map again. Draw a line from the northern tip of the Dead Sea from east to west. That's the bottom southern boundary of Gad. The northern boundary of Gad is the Jabbok River, which runs into the Galilee Sea, the Jordan River, about halfway to the Sea of Galilee, or partway to the Sea of Galilee. That's the northern boundary. Now, the eastern boundary of Gad is, there's nothing really to mark it. It's about, I don't know how many miles it is, but it's, you go a ways over there to the east, and you get to the western border of Ammon. So Gad and Ammon are butting up against each other. They share a common north-south border. Now, the Jabbok River, as it runs to the northern boundary of Gad, right when it starts to drop to the southeast, that's where Ammon starts. And so the river runs southeast, and then it actually doubles back to the west and ends up going through Rabbah, the famous Rabbah, also called Rabbath Ammon, present-day Ammon, Jordan. That's the capital of Ammon. So if Mahanaim is on the northern border of Gad, and Ammon is just a hop, skip, and a jump to the east down the Jabbok River, it makes sense that somebody from Ammon, namely Shobai, he's from Rabbah, present-day Ammon, right there in the middle of Ammon. That's where he's from, and so he's close by, and he brings food. Now, there's a problem here. He's called the son of Nahash. That means he's either the descendant of Nahash. It would go from Nahash to Hanan to Shobai. Hanan was the Ammonite king. Well, first of all, Nahash was the first opponent of Saul when Saul had just taken over the kingdom of Israel, and Saul whipped him. And then Nahash had a son called Hanan, and when Nahash died, David sent ambassadors to Ammon, to Rabbah, to commiserate, just as a matter of politics, diplomacy, and sympathy. And Hanan took David's ambassadors, stripped their, cut their cloaks off so that their private parts were exposed, shaved their beards halfway, which was a mark of intense shame, and basically acted like a horse's rear. Well, if you got Nahash fighting against Saul, and you got Hanan doing that horrible thing to David, why in the world would the son of Nahash, Shobai is either the son, if he's the son of Nahash, that means he's the brother of Hanan. Some people say he's the grandson of Nahash, because son can sometimes mean grandson. But either way, whether Shobai is the brother of Hanan or the son of Hanan, it doesn't matter. These, the first two kings of Ammon, were enemies of Israel, Nahash and Hanan. Why is Shobai all of a sudden so friendly that he's bringing food to David? Well, Ellicott, the commentator, says this: David had made Shobai governor after David had conquered Rabbah, and so that's why Shobai was friendly with him. Or it could be, Ellicott says, that this Nahash is not the original Nahash king of Ammon that Saul had beaten, but he's the son of some Israelite named Nahash who lived in Rabbah. Well, I don't know. I think it makes more sense to say that David had appointed Shobai as governor of Ammon there. At any rate, he got help from Shobai, and he also got help from Machir, the son of Amiel from Lodabar. I'm sure you don't remember him, but he was the same guy that brought Mephibosheth to David when David was looking for a descendant of the house of Saul, 2 Samuel 9:5. Then King David sent and brought him, Mephibosheth, from the house of Machir. Mephibosheth, that's Jonathan's son, from the house of Machir, the son of Amiel from Lodabar, same guy. Some people suppose that this Machir is a brother of Bathsheba. I don't know how in the world they know that. And then there's another guy named Barzillai. Nobody knows who he is, really. Jameson Foster Brown says, quote, he's a wealthy old grandee whose great age and infirmities made his loyal devotion to the distressed monarch peculiarly affecting. Barzillai is from a place called Rogalim, which, according to BibleAtlas.org, is probably somewhere near Mahanaim, but they don't know exactly where Mahanaim is either. But it's somewhere east of the Jordan on the Jabbok River, and that's basically in the area. Lodabar is unknown. Amiel is from Lodabar, unknown. Barzillai, Rogalim, unknown, but probably near the Jabbok River. So, enough of geography. Let's just point out that Ahithophel's bad advice to Absalom causing Absalom to spend a whole bunch of time getting a huge army together, gave David's men time to eat and regain their strength. So they're camped here, eating all the stuff that was brought to them. And so now we're ready for the confrontation now between David and Absalom in our next audio, which I'll entitle Absalom is Killed. Spoiler alert, I'm sorry, that's how it's going to end up. David's going to win, Absalom is going to get killed, going to get his hair caught in a tree. I hope you stay tuned for that exciting story in our next audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.